Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Get behind the wheel of your new Opel at the Opel Open Road event now on at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
After 8 months of cocooning, my next guest contracted COVID in hospital after having a bad fall at home. The disease took such a toll on her body that she didn't see her children for 50 days and spent 3 months following her discharge on oxygen. Louise Crowley is Professor of Law at UCC and she joins me on the line. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks very much for coming on to tell us your story. So you were cocooning at home. Can you explain why, firstly?
Sure. Well, I started cocooning about a week or two before the national shutdown on the 13th of March because I was really aware of how vulnerable I was. I have lupus. I got lupus when I was 17, so more about 30 years ago, and so have a very compromised immune system. I've been on immunosuppressants since that time, and so very conscious that if I was to catch COVID, that it was inevitable that I would catch it in a very severe way. So took those steps very early on to cocoon, worked from home full-time since early March, and took, you know, very careful with any social interactions. And in turn, my kids and my husband were incredibly careful about avoiding social situations. My kids were very aware of the importance of, you know, not being in anybody's house and really abiding by extremely by the lockdown rules, so to keep me safe.
After all that effort, you had a bad fall at home. When did that happen?
So that happened on the 4th of November, and I was brought into the CUH by ambulance. And so as I was leaving home, I told the kids I'd see them in a few days, that I just had to go in and have the x-ray and have it sorted. And unfortunately, the irony of being so careful for 9 months, that when I got into the healthcare setting, that I was in a ward, an orthopaedic ward, and unfortunately, the lady in the bed next to me had transpired, unknowingly had COVID. And so it all began.
She was quite mildly ill. So you thought, and your doctors thought, that you might get a mild dose as well.
Yeah. So the news was that this lady had already gone down to the COVID unit and was sitting outside the bed and, you know, very, very few symptoms. So they were very hopeful that it was just a mild strain. And so I was, you know, it wasn't that perturbed. I said, fine, we'll go down to the high dependency unit. And off we went. I remember on the Thursday morning being wheeled down and, you know, I was in great form and thought everything would be fine in a few days. And the first couple of days, you know, mild symptoms, headaches, nausea, I was vomiting a lot. But after about the third day, it just blew up. And I was moved to, you know, the room just outside the nurse's station. I was under 24/7 monitoring. And I just got very, very sick very quickly with multiple organ involvement. And it got very, I'd say, hairy, for want of a better word, for a period of time. And
all this time. Must have been terrifying, was it?
Well, it was terrifying kind of on two levels. One, from a medical point of view, I knew I was spiraling. I knew I was very bad. I mean, I couldn't physically get out of the bed, sit up on the bed. I couldn't breathe without the oxygen mask. And as the tests were coming in, things were deteriorating every day. I couldn't eat. I was incredibly sick. So my body not only was being attacked by this illness, but in turn, I couldn't fight back because I was getting weaker and weaker. And so, you know, they had to pull out all the stops in terms of the oxygen machines and the monitoring and the testing and testing my blood. I couldn't tell you how many times a day watching the oxygen levels. And then, I guess, from a psychological viewpoint, there was that powerlessness, the absolute no control over what was happening. And then, I suppose, personally, the loneliness and the sadness, and I won't say despair, but certainly the severe worry of what was going to happen next. You know, as you mentioned, I ultimately was 50 days in isolation away from my husband and my three children, with no social engagement or personal engagement. I would receive messages from, say, my book club girls or my college girls and my friends and my family, but I was trying to play it down a lot to them. My kids were never told. I have two teenagers and a 10-year-old, and there was just no way I could let them know what was happening. They were very aware of what COVID was and how awful it could potentially be. So bless them, they thought I was in there with a dodgy pelvis bone for 50 days. And my husband just, you know, took control of everything. And his job was to mind them and keep them in school and keep with the homework. And my job was just to keep fighting and get out eventually.
I'm trying to imagine what it was like for him, trying to, you know, pretend to be normal in front of them, and they didn't know how sick you were. You weren't on a ventilator. You were on the CPAP, which is the non-invasive ventilator. What was that like, Louise?
Yeah, so the ICU were kind of on standby the whole time, but they were very wary of putting me in ICU because my body was so vulnerable that, you know, that kind of a procedure in ICU may not actually have helped me. And so the feeling was I would stay on the CPAP, which is this incredibly intense oxygen face mask. So I understand that they normally put someone on that for 2 or 3 days and it can be immense help and they recover then from that. But or it doesn't work at all, and then they take the next step to ICU. But for me, they left me on it for 10 days and 10 nights, 24/7. I slept sitting up when I could sleep, and it was so intense. I would compare it to sticking your head out the car window, driving, you know, down the motorway at top speed. It was unbelievable. And then to the extent that the oxygen was so fierce to help me breathe at all, because my lungs were so filled that I just couldn't breathe, that it actually blew a hole in my esophagus from the force, which led to other complications. Like I had to put a PICC line in my vein in my arm and feed me through a bag for 10 days to allow that to heal. So it really, and then because of that crack, I got emphysema. So I was swelling within my body during all of this. So it was literally, Claire, multi-layered.
Oh my gosh.
I would think I was getting better and then there would be another blow. And again, doing this, I won't say all alone, because I have to say the help, the care I got in the CUH was phenomenal. I mean, I have a team already and they were there with me every day. And the nurses, I can't even begin to tell you. I mean, it gets me emotional to think about the kindness and the generosity 24/7, 4 o'clock in the morning, when, you know, I would be, I was upset or, you know, hugely anxious from the combination of the meds and my circumstances, that I they would come in and stay with me. And then, of course, all the personal support in terms of what I couldn't do, you know, I couldn't do anything for myself, and the kindness that they showed to me. I mean, you cannot overstate the goodness and the generosity that was shown to me. And of course, they were all only eyes to me. I never saw anybody. Mm-hmm. Because everybody was masked within an inch of their life. And I have a memory of, it was a Joanne from Mallow, and there was a nurse, Anita, who was with me when they eventually took the mask off my face. And I remember being afraid to close my eyes at 4 a.m. because I didn't trust myself to breathe without it. And she sat with me and she promised to stay with me so that if I closed my eyes, she would be there in case anything went wrong, you know. And it was just phenomenal when I was at my lowest, that I could, you know, that I had this support when I didn't have, you know, my own sort of personal circle, you know, my mum and dad and my family. So
it must have been frightening for them as well. You know, I know they're not going to tell you that, but you can imagine yourself dealing with this type of the situation.
Yeah. It was because of the unknown. We didn't know how I was going to be. Not to mind tomorrow. We didn't know how I was going to be in 2 hours. So I literally would spend the day. You know, okay, the next 2 hours now, Louise, get through the next 2 hours. You know, if I had to sleep, if they had to prone me, if, you know, whatever I needed to do, it was just, that's how I was counting out the days, just getting to the next day. And it was very hard for, I guess, people who weren't in the hospital with me. So my mum and dad were in Spain at the time. And, you know, I would message them when I was well enough and sometimes even manage a FaceTime, but trying to, you know, be brave and be strong. And I wouldn't entertain the ultimate bad thoughts. I just couldn't go there in my head, but reassuring people that I was fine. You know, and technology was great. I mean, as I got better, I was the kids would put me on the table on FaceTime and I could sit there for 5 minutes while they were having dinner, you know, virtually. So
that helped, no doubt. But you went in on the 4th of November and you were discharged from hospital right up before Christmas, the 23rd.
So I made it home to Bishopstown before Santa, and that was the big aim, to be honest, you know, just to get home for the kids. And I'd miss my daughter's birthday on the 20th, you know, and there was all those little emotional things that were really hard for them. But, you know, when I got home, so I was discharged in a wheelchair with the oxygen tanks and stayed on the oxygen until March 24/7. So, you know, sleep all night with it on, which wasn't great. And then, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and John came home at lunchtime every day to bring me downstairs and carry the machine downstairs. So I was utterly dependent. When I eventually started walking in the middle of January, I had a Zimmer frame. I started back driving in March. And to this day, I have a stick still. So we went for a walk yesterday, the five of us, but I had to bring my stick and it was very slow. But, you know, they're great. My kids are great and they understand. And if we're going anything hilly, they'll each take a turn. You know, I would lean on them. And so life is just different now. It's harder. Everything is a bit harder. But, you know, I mean, God, Claire, if you could tell me in November, December that I'm here now and I'm working and, you know, I can do most of the things I used to do, just slower and more carefully. I would have grabbed it with both hands.
But you've just, I mean, when you describe it in the way that you do, you've just been through the mill.
Yeah, but I'm here.
You're here. And it's great that you're here. Yeah. But I do want to talk to you a little bit about how you are now. I mean, describing the walk and you talk about the cane. What other health implications are you dealing with now, Louise?
I mean, the breathlessness is the obvious one. So, you know, I can be fine for 5 or 10 minutes. I could pop into centre and get bread and milk and that's fine. But other times I could literally go from the TV room to the kitchen and I'd have to stop and sit down. When I'm folding the clothes, it sounds, you know, like, so examples of silly things. So I'm folding the clothes. I have to sit at the table. I can't stand because my arms aren't strong enough. My legs aren't strong enough. My muscles, I have wasted muscles from a combination of lying in the bed, but mostly all the steroids were pumped into me. And so I can now go to the kids' GA matches again, but I have my own seat that I bring with me. And I'm that mom who's sitting on the sideline on the seat with my mask on. But, you know, everybody's so good to me there and everybody knows my story. And so everybody gives me a bit of space. But, like, things are very challenging. I have a lot of gastro problems, so I have a couple of procedures now next week for that. A lot of headaches. So yesterday, even as I said, we went for a walk, but first I had to take my painkillers, you know, and have my stick and be ready for it. So it's just my balance isn't great. It's like a litany. My balance isn't great, whatever that arises from. So it's probably my weak muscles. And also just generally, I have to tread carefully. My terrible memory loss, so I remember this conversation tomorrow. But, you know, little things every day. I just think just my memory isn't what it was. So it's just everything seems a bit compromised would probably be the best word, Claire. Mm-hmm. And so it's all over, like all parts of my body are affected by it.
Well, Louise, it's something else. The story is quite something. Thank you for telling it so well. And we wish you well in your continuing recovery.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being
not
with
at all.
Us.
And thanks for talking. Yeah.
That's Louise Crowley, Professor of Law at UCC. We've had a lot of emails in about our next topic because after the break, we'll be talking to Aoife Niocki, a clinical specialist pelvic physiotherapist. So if you have any questions, do email us to todaycb@rte.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.